There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, I'm sitting here on my dog bed. I'm covered in old dog hair. I'm feeling ready to do a show. I'm covered with a fine, thick pelt of hair as it is already.
You are. All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks in a dog bed. That's not a lie. He is in a closet in a dog bed. Puppy head. Bulldog.
Bulldog. Henry Zebrowski. And I'm horny like a little bulldog. Have you ever seen a little bulldog? You can pick him up and he's got a little tiny hard penis and you can throw him at a cat. He'll just fuck a shit out of a cat.
All right. So today's topic is interesting. We're going back into the world of cults, right?
Yeah.
Is this correct?
Oh, now, absolutely.
Now, this is a fascinating cult, and they are called, it's a huge one, and it's called Children of God.
Yep. The Children of God, now known as the Family International, is a far-reaching Christian sex cult started in the late 60s by a then 50-year-old failed Pentecostal preacher named Dave Berg, No relation to the beloved Mad Magazine artist of the same name.
And you learned that the hard way, because originally you sent me a text so excited that David Berg was also the artist behind The Lighter Side in Mad Magazine. You were excited.
I knew that Dave Berg was the guy who did The Lighter Side of it's The Lighter Side of the Gas Crisis.
Yeah.
But I knew immediately that it was not my beloved Dave Berg.
You know, there are a lot of people that are really upset right now, right? Because the country's still kind of reeling from the election. But no matter how upset you are right now, at least you're not a part of an organization that you were born into where you're forced to have sex with your own aunt.
Ah, well, you know.
There's a lighter side, Dave Berg.
Oh, that's the lighter side?
Yes, having fun with it. Having fun with 2016.
I like the bulldog lighter side. Uh-oh.
Now, over the years, as Henry said, the Children of God cult became embroiled in a number of sex scandals involving incest, religious prostitution, child abuse, and pedophilia. They have since reformed and now operate as a fairly respectable French Christian cult, but its beginnings are beyond sinister.
Okay, just one question. Religious prostitution? Does that mean all the prostitutes dress like nuns and they hang out on the street corner? What is religious prostitution?
And trust me, we will get into flirty fishing on the next episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of flirty fishing going on in this country, but mostly it's between uncles and their poor, poor nephews.
If it has anything to do with what I know for a fact the Mormons do, which is a thing called soaking, it will be disturbing.
Soaking? What's soaking?
Soaking is when you simply put your male genitalia inside of a woman and you just sit.
Ah, yes.
You soak it like it's a businessman who's in Japan selling a big, you know, making a big deal and he wants to go to sauna.
Where I am from up north, we call that steeping.
Oh, I did colloquialisms.
Now, the founder of the Children of God, David Berg, was just another in a long line of people who either belonged to or were leaders of fringe Christian sects. Berg's earliest ancestors in America were a trio of Jews who converted to a Mennonite sect known as the Dunkers, so named because they preferred to nearly drown their congregants during baptism.
Also, not to completely interrupt, but have you ever had an apple cider donut made by the Amish community? Only good thing they do.
And furniture as well.
Furniture as well, and quilts. Oh, ugh. Hand of God.
I have to say, I just had a terrible flashback. Of course, I grew up evangelical. We know that. I got dipped in, I believe it was Iverson or Jordan Park, and I was so fat I wore the white shirt because I was like, they're never going to see my boobs now. And I got dumped by Pastor Matt. I come out of the water. They laughed at me.
Yeah.
They laughed at my boobs. And you know when you wear the shirt, your belly button becomes larger than it actually is? Uh-huh. It looks like you can go spelunking in it, and they laughed at me.
Oh, yeah. All the fat kids tried that. We call that the swimming pool fat. Fallacy.
Fallacy. I did that throughout my whole... I told that story before about how I used to wear the shirt in the pool, and then they used to make fun of me relentlessly, and then they pulled me in the shower and stripped me nude and all made fun of my penis.
And that's how Henry Zebrowski knew he wanted to be president one day.
But it's also David Berg's grandparents, when they so they chose the hard way from the very beginning. He said his grandfather was known as like a fighter, that they would literally go as these Jewish guys, now Mennonites, from Jewish to Amish. Now they're living in America and they're literally just going places and fighting people in the street. And he said that they had no idea what they were doing, like religiously, but they made a shit ton of money. And David Berg put it because his grandfather was a Jew all the way to the end. David Berg is a great man. You guys are really going to love David Berg as we go through these episodes.
Yeah, and Berg's grandfather, John Lincoln Brandt, was a Campbellite, which was a movement that looked to return the church to a purer time before established church doctrine, avoiding what they called, quote, churchianity.
Huh, that's an interesting term. I kind of like it.
Yeah, churchianity meaning that they are more beholden to the church than they are to the Word of God.
Yeah, their big fancy church talk where they don't have sex with their children and don't have sex with their sisters and brothers.
Interesting. I mean, I sort of took it the other way. I thought they would be against the institution, but pro only the biblical word.
Yeah, that's totally. Exactly what they are.
Oh, that is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they're
totally.
Doing the flip reverse of biblical words so deep that even Jesus Christ is just like, I'm going to kill myself again. I'm going to come back just to kill myself again, just so that you guys can get a bit of a redo, because there's some kind of, you guys are going off the fucking campus here.
But then when you actually do read the Bible, everything, you can pick out some very creepy passages, and I would think Jesus must have quite a few Stephen Urkel moments. Did I do that? He's like, why are you having sex with your niece? Right here, sir, it says you can.
He's did I do that? Right now, he's just in heaven right now, fucking the hole in his hand over and over again.
Berg's mother, Virginia Brandt, was a radio evangelist and traveling preacher who made her name during the Pentecostal revival that took hold during the early part of the 20th century, which was big on fire and brimstone, speaking in tongues, laying of hands, what they called old-time religion.
But it's interesting because this was like newfangled at the time. This was like the hip, quote-unquote, hipster religion, where they were putting a lot of passion and intensity into Christianity, and also ladles and ladles of horseshit.
Right.
Yeah, Virginia's hook came from an accident she supposedly had in which she was thrown from a horse and buggy, broke her back, and was bedridden for 5 years. And one day, miraculously and without explanation, she rose from her bed cured and was thenceforth known as the Miracle Woman, telling her tale of divine healing. And she took her story, which she called From Deathbed to Pulpit, and became one of America's first female evangelists and hosted a fairly popular radio show that she called Meditation Moments.
I mean, she definitely made the best out of a terrible situation. Why couldn't James Caan do the same thing from the film Misery, you know? I mean, he was just lying there like a whiny ass.
Well, the only problem was that was all bullshit.
None of that happened.
Yeah,
that
didn't none happen. Of it happened. Years later, one of David Berg's daughters revealed that during the time she was supposedly bedridden, she was actually down in Fort Worth attending Texas Christian University.
Which is actually a more inspiring story. Yeah. She was in college getting her master's degree, but the problem was that she was having a child at the time that went on to disown them because she grew up like basically immediately became an atheist like some kids do and saw through all of their horseshit and was like, what are you guys talking about? And they kind of exorcised her from the family. So she used that story to cover up that whole birth of a child.
Yeah. Well, she didn't just use it that. I mean, David Berg, I mean, in other words, justifying a lie in order to get people to believe in Jesus' word, that was in Berg's DNA. I mean, these people are no different from Bigfoot hunters who fake dead Bigfoot bodies because they know in their hearts that Bigfoot is real. They absolutely right. know that Bigfoot is real, but they don't have any real proof, so they make some shit up to get people halfway there.
And if the ends justify the means, it's all okay.
Exactly. Now, David Berg's father, his name was Hjalmar Berg.
What was that?
Hjalmar Berg.
I'm sorry, what?
Hjalmar Berg? Hjalmar Berg. His first name was Hjalmar, last name Berg.
Is he a talking couch from Pee Wee's Playhouse?
It does sound like it.
Hjalmar Berg.
It does sound like a piece of furniture from IKEA that has come to life.
It does.
He was a poor Swedish immigrant who, before coming to America, made extra money during the Swedish summers performing musical numbers and acrobatic routines in a wandering minstrel show.
Now, this is going to be one of your racist minstrel shows. This show is going to be lots of kicking and dancing and jumping and oof, it seems my trousers have fallen around my ankles. Oof, is there a child who's giving it to Circus Cirque? Oh no! No, Herr Hjalmar, I slapped my own hand. Slap my hand, most nutty Herr Hjalmar.
And that is if Charles Ng was born a Swedish man.
I don't know how to do a Swedish accent. And what I will say is now that we're in the world of just Sweden, I'm allowed to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
No Swiss, Swedish bullshit connected to it. It is Jorn of Jorn and Hjalmar, standing tall and blonde, who said to have a beautiful tenor singing voice, did nothing to stop anyone from hurting anyone.
See, now, we talk a lot here about the perfect serial killer soup. For example, Henry Lee Lucas was created by a terrible childhood with an abusive mother, an already broken mind made worse by exposure to brain-rotting chemicals, and the ease of passage of a drifter lifestyle.
Now, you're really selling it, Marcus. And I actually want that. Yeah, at this point in time, I want that.
Better than split pea, I'll tell you that.
So when you combine David Berg's ancestry with the first 50 years of his life as a failed charismatic preacher and add in the naivete of the hippie movement, David Berg was the product of a perfect cult leader soup.
It's very interesting how we see that's true, that there are a certain number of factors that completely work out for a cult leader. And a part of it is having a period of time where there's a lot of the shit going on. And now what we know is that it was in the 1920s in America, the 1960s in America, and then also with the 70s, 80s in Japan, right? They're the perfect fertile time for people that have lost themselves. They're a part of a new generation. They're looking for somebody to talk to. And all of these weird side religions are getting mixed together. And that's where someone like David Berg, who's not necessarily great on detail work, but great on broad strokes, is right. Good at taking a bunch of religions and smashing them together and have you allow you to have sex with your children.
It is unbelievable. I mean, my parents, they turned to Daystar. That was their Christian cult. They were all over the place. And the irony is, it was the children, this was their rebellion against their evangelical or Baptist, whatever parents.
Oh, yeah. And we'll definitely get into the whole rebellion part of it. Now, as far as David Berg himself goes, he was born in Oakland, California on February 18th, 1919. In a letter to a friend of hers, Virginia said about baby David,
"At first, he was a fat and robust little fellow, but I overfed him. I had such a quantity of milk, and he developed bowel trouble." Oh.
Mrs. Zabrowski?
No, I told you my thing. I couldn't suckle out of my mother's tit because I had weak cheek muscles.
That's right, like a little piggy.
I had to drink. My mom had to milk herself into a cup, and I'd have to drink it out of a straw.
Oh,
They thought I was gonna die of malnourishment.
Oh, I think if I was a doctor, I would have said, "Miss Zabrowski, you just have the world's fanciest boy. Only out of a cup will do."
"I'll have it in a highball glass, thank you. And don't be slow about it. A little spank for you. Here's a dollar. I found it in my diaper."
Now, the reason for writing the bowel trouble letter was that Virginia was claiming that a faith healing had taken place here. She said a local healer had come to see the constipated baby, done his work, and the very next morning, David had his first natural bowel movement since his breast milk-induced sickness began.
Nothing would please me more to go back to childhood where I'd be praised for taking shits again.
Oh, you know? My God. It was so nice. Is there a chance this person just accidentally sat on David and then he shat and he's like, he's been cured?
Just rolled him back and forth on top of like a pizza tray.
Yes.
Looks like we made a Tootsie Roll. Congratulations, David.
It wasn't until after David was born that his family threw in with the Pentecostals, which in the 20s was just starting to gain steam. Now, Pentecostals, for those of you who don't know, are the snake handlers, the faith healers, the tongue speakers. These are the people that really, really get into it. And have either one of you guys ever been to like a Pentecostal or Foursquare church or anything like that?
I got kicked out of Christian school in third grade because I couldn't speak in tongues, and that was an early indication about how I wouldn't be able to improvise, and it really made me, not do well at the People's Improv Theater during those classes. It was horrific.
I mean, speaking in tongues, all you have to do is like the ah.
Try it. Oh, you hit a couple of triple B's in there too, man. You are good.
You should hear me in traffic. I feel like when I'm driving in LA and I'm alone, I go, God, fuck, suck,
I have driven in traffic in LA with Henry many times for many hours, and the things that I heard could end his career.
Yeah.
No, 1925, when David was six, the Berg family moved to Miami and started the Berg Evangelistic Dramatic Company.
God, that's so much fun. It's like the it's like the Electric Company. See, all of these things were very exciting. These people really knew how to put on a show.
Oh, yeah. They were all showmen. They'd been that way for years. And they took it from a lot of different spaces.
Because Virginia was known as, of course, she was the preacher, but Hjalmar was known as choreographer and music director. So he literally was singing and dancing, goose stepping around with his perfect blonde hair while everybody was just being like, I can't believe how big the Swede is. They were just so excited to see a Swede.
I feel like it's a Michelle and Marcus Bachman type thing happening here. I think Marcus and this, what's his name?
Hjalmar.
Hjalmar.
Hjalmar in Virginia.
Yeah, he might have enjoyed a different type.
He might have.
I do believe that in the 1920s, music director was slang for homosexual.
Yes.
Now, within just a year of starting the Evangelistic Dramatic Company, the group had moved from a small tent of just a few dozen to a 4,500-seat auditorium. David said his memories from this time were not so much of the revivals, but more of the constant scoldings he got from his mother because the kid played with himself too goddamn much.
And this is true. He legitimately was a compulsive masturbator by the age of 4 years old. And he does not remember a single thing about his childhood, but just how much he loved to masturbate.
That's it.
But that's just I don't know. Do you call your kid out for diddling? I mean, he's 2, 3, 4 years old?
Well, this is what... I mean, I've seen definitely parents being like, hey, kid, get your hands out of your pants. Because kids like to put their hands in their pants, especially boys.
It's warm. You get immediate satisfaction.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, but most kids, you can just kind of like spat them off and be like, hey, kid, you can't do that in public.
Oh, yeah.
That's what most people do. I was a nude boy, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of my... I was always taking my pants off. I'd get a little like, eep. And I go like, hey, I'd stick it at plants and stuff. You know what I mean? But I was given a healthy dose of shame. You know what I mean? The shame helped keep me together.
I think you have to just deliver the shame in the proper way. You don't beat them so then they get hard and then they associate a whipping with it.
And that's pretty much what happened with David Berg. One night when Virginia caught David diddling himself, she brought the whole family into the room and brought a bowl and knife along with her and told David that if he didn't stop diddling himself, she was going to cut off his dick in front of the whole family.
This is how you make John Travolta. This is not good parenting.
But David said that didn't stop him at all because, quote,
it felt too good to quit, my dear.
He also told a story, unconfirmed, that he had a Mexican babysitter named Maria who, quote,
used to suck me to sleep for my nap every afternoon.
God, I do like the idea of him being 4 years old and sounding like Christopher Lee.
Maria, come closer. How am I supposed to take my nappy without my baba? Unless you give me a little bit of a sucky-sucky on my wee-wee knob.
It is very sad and disturbing because he's four. But if he's 34...
I mean, it's criminal.
Now, David would later use this incident as an excuse to molest young children under the guise of, quote, calming them down and to command and allow other members of his cult to do the same. In fact, his daughter used to talk about how her dad, to get her to sleep, and she would talk about this just completely openly like it was the most normal thing in the world. She said that he used to give him a front rubbing.
I was just wondering, okay, so you have a situation, and this is a question that I'm asking, putting it on my student cap.
Okay, situation. Good. Because I will say, researching this whole Children of God cult, I felt very Pete Townsend.
Yes, it is disgusting. They said they felt normal with it until society told them it was abnormal. If the society would have never said it was abnormal, would they have...
That came from up top. That came from David. David told them that society told him that that was supposed to be abnormal, and now we're normalizing it. Now you're going to hear the term normalizing a lot now because of Donald Trump and all this stuff, but that's the idea, right? It's creating, making it banal, making it every day, making it be a thing that we're now going to get used to. He said that there was nothing wrong because he experienced sexual activity as a child and he liked it, but mostly just because he probably is a sociopath or psychopath.
He's a textbook narcissist.
But would the shame be attached so heavily to it if society didn't deem it? I mean, obviously, it's completely repulsive.
In this cult, what Berg has to have is that he has to have his children. He has to have the people that are closest to him. He has to force them to come out because these people were not okay with it. They were just saying in public that they were okay
with
it.
Right. Yeah.
So Berg forces these people to go out and say, like, hey, listen, it was done to me when I was a kid, and look at how great I turned out to be. I'm second in command of the children of God. The cult that all of you, not even cult, the family that all of you belong to and love. So it's completely and totally okay for you to do it to your kids and to let us do it to your kids.
Meanwhile, they see a rat.
We're going to get there because you got to remember at some point he's just building the cult. What we now know about cults is that once it's too late, then he can, because we're going to, that the whole children, the idea of sexualizing children doesn't really happen until later on.
Yeah.
When he is now, like, he's already got them. They've already given them their possessions. He is now got them, and he is now slowly advancing that, starting with his inner circle, and it started so inner, it started with his kids. And you actually see this obsession, sexual obsession, in many starts of many religions. Mormonism is number one. Like, Joe Smith used his sexual addiction in order to, and use the Bible to back up his polyamory to have multiple wives,
right?
Because it's all on him. It's all about his sexual gratification. What you're going to find about David Berg is that it's got nothing to do with the family. It's got nothing to do with the cult. He's trying to create an entire society that says it's okay for him to live how he wants to live with his sexual problems, because children have no consent. Children cannot give consent. They cannot say, yes, please. Yes, thank you. No matter how they respond. So it's like you are showing a child from very early when you do these sorts of acts toward them that they have no power, which destroys their ego for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and as far as sex being the motivators of cults, it's not just the want of sex, but also the shame of sex. Look at Heaven's Gate. Mm-hmm. Heaven's Gate was a complete and total reaction to Marshall Applewhite's just a complete and total lack of understanding and lack of acceptance about his own homosexuality. Is that that was the whole thing with Marshall Applewhite, is that he was gay, so his way to try to overcome his gayness was the castration thing, and then when that didn't work, it was the mass suicide thing. I mean, that's the whole thing about Heaven's Gate, is that it happened because Marshall Applewhite couldn't come to terms with the fact that he wanted cock.
Well, the first thing that happened with Applewhite was he saw aliens and he's like, I want to have Sigourney Weaver's haircut, and then he shaved his hair, and then he's like, now I'm going with you. Now I gotta cut this thing off.
Well, David, as is fairly obvious at this point, he had a lifelong compulsion towards and an obsession with sex, and his mother's attempts to curb that seemed to have the absolute opposite effect. When she caught him masturbating again when he was a teenager, she called in Berg's father, Hjalmar, and made David finish to completion in front of him.
How would this work? It's the equivalent of you. Oh, I caught you smoking. Now smoke the whole pack. Next thing you know, the guy's the Marlboro Man.
Well, I mean, that's what.
Oh,
this...
David, when you do your bit of your jerky dirk, I couldn't help but notice you don't squirt very much. Here's some celery. He just keeps like telling him, you know, can you imagine have to do that in front of your homosexual Swedish father?
Oh, good. Yeah, that is. That's insane.
Well, what it actually seemed to do with David Berg is that it seemed to instill like a ridiculously rebellious attitude towards sex for David, and it somewhat normalized the shattering of sexual boundaries towards family members, because of course, like, he would be sitting there masturbating in front of his father, and that didn't dissuade him. And
he's just sitting there polishing the buttons to his lederhosen, choreographing five girls in a crucifix position, trying to shout about the triumph of God. How could you not come?
But this is if you're a parent, you walk in on your teenage son, it's very normal to masturbate. You just walk out.
Yeah.
Why would you? I don't. There are some issues here.
Oh yeah, there's quite a few.
My mom caught me once masturbating on the computer, and she called me. She said, "You're a pig. You're a disgusting pig." And then pulled me out into the, because they had put the computer in my room when I was 14 years old.
Not a good idea.
And it was like, I had known about porn, and we had just gotten the internet, and so I just went like, lesbian schoolgirls. I just went click 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 like an orangutan using a tool.
That was it.
Well, that whole sexual boundaries between family members, that would almost be crossed with David's mother, according to David, at the age of 19. See, by the time David was in his late teens, he was working as his mother's chauffeur, driving her from revival to revival so she could spread the word of the miracle woman. And one night, they found themselves having to stay in a cold room with only one bed. As the two shared the bed, the temperature dropped, and David's mother wrapped him in a warm embrace. And what Henry is about to read, this is not hearsay. This is not secondhand. This is information that David Berg not only freely offered, but sent out to his followers in a letter. Henry?
So remember this. Okay, so number one, he's bragging about this. Number two, I'm going to again describe to you what Virginia Berg looked like. She looked like Danny DeVito with a wig on.
Oh, like, not bad.
I mean, she's like, from his perspective, again, just remember, I just want to say this out there to all men, to all women too. If you have problems, if you have problems deciding if you want to sleep with somebody or not, and you find somebody irrationally attractive, masturbate first. Masturbate before making a life-changing decision.
All right, just go do the bit.
My first reaction was absolute terrified shock to think that my mother would get so close to me and wrap her arms around me and her body around mine in such an almost sexual embrace. It certainly was a loving embrace and affectionate, and perhaps she meant nothing by it whatsoever. But I think for the first time in my life, I had sexual feelings about my mother. And in those days, when very young, I was quite virile. Impotent. I can remember having her snuggle and feeling her warm, soft body against mine, her bosoms against my back. She had on a nightgown, a very thin nightgown. She was still a beautiful woman at 55, charming, and although a little on the plump side, quite pretty and very attractive. And there she was, with her bosoms against my back and her arms wrapped around me, and almost her legs wrapped around me. I suddenly got quite an electric sexual jolt that I had never experienced before, and I was almost immediately erect. Perhaps if I had not been so conservative and extremely narrow-minded in my theology and religion at the time, and so absolutely frightened of my mother's seeming abandon at the moment, I might have been a little more responsive. Perhaps I could have satisfied both of us and our mutual tremendous sexual needs. It could have developed into a beautiful sexual relationship.
Jeez. All right. I mean,
now my question is that who's hard now?
Because I know. Well, I know I did want to ask, but I didn't even want to ask though. I don't think we should even go down that road, because if you are, then thanks for listening. And if you aren't, that's good.
Yeah, I got a feeling if we ask David Berg the question that Henry's been asking everyone on last stream on the left,
yes.
How much money would it take to have sex with your mother? I think
I would take a dollar simply for the Jimmy hat.
Yeah, I think David would take one of those $1 ceremonial fees.
I think so, too. All right.
No.
But he didn't do it, so he did show some restraint.
He didn't
do it. Yeah, he didn't rape his own mother. Yeah, you're
yes.
right.
So, I mean, I'm just, you know, so that is good. That's a positive.
Now, with World War II raging and David not wanting any part of the fight, naturally, he became an ordained minister and conscientious objector in 1941 and met his first wife, Jane Miller. 2 years later, they married and had two children, Deborah in 1945 and Aaron in 1947. David was appointed to be a minister to a struggling church in Valley Farms, Arizona, but was run out of town amid rumors of a sex scandal that, to this day, remain a mystery. David said he left because he wanted Native Americans to attend the service, but the town refused, and he left
obviously,
on moral grounds.
Oh, I
David
see.
David tried so hard. You know he tried so hard.
This is unbelievable. So this disgusting human being took the moral high ground against fighting the Nazis, and then he went to, what was it, Texas?
Arizona.
Arizona, and pretended like he was too open-minded for the church?
Yeah.
What a
jerk. Now, excuse me, your name is Chief Running Bear? So lovely to meet you. Remind me, I couldn't help but notice your daughter is so young and sweet.
She is 14, yes.
14? It's almost a spinster in my age.
I would appreciate it if you stayed away from my daughter.
I want nothing to do with your daughter. I want you nothing whatsoever. I was wondering if you wanted something to do with your own daughter.
These are the deleted scenes from There Will Be Blood.
Drink your milkshake. And make love to your daughter.
It always seems to go back to that in some strange way. You can find a segue into it no matter what we're talking about.
Now, after he got run out of Valley Farms, he worked under a faith healer named Orville Jaggers. But that didn't work out.
These aren't names, and these aren't people. I don't believe any of this is true any longer.
What, you've never met a guy?
Orville Jaggers? No, because that is like, that is a make-believe name that you tell the cops when you know you're on the lam.
What if that was what the original meaning of the song Moves Like Jagger came from?
Maybe.
Now, after Orville, David moved on to an evangelist named Fred Jordan, who had founded the American Soul Clinic, which was a missionary training school. And David spent 15 years with Jordan working under his shadow, just as he had worked under the shadow of his mother. And a falling out came in 1966, and David, now almost 50 years old, took his four kids on the road as the Berg Family Singers, which was another failure. See, a lot of cult leaders are miserable failures before they find their calling. See, Berg was a failed preacher. If you watch the documentary Holy Hell that's on Netflix right now, it's fucking awesome. You'll see that the leader of the Buddha Field cult, Jaime Gomez, who rechristened himself Andreas, was a failed actor.
Yes. And gay porn as well.
Yep. And Charles Manson was just an all-around failure.
David Koresh?
I mean, David Koresh, I mean, he was
pretty much a failure.
He was pretty much a failure. He got in on it early.
He was a religious career man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's where David Berg is really interesting, is that because he was a religious career man, but he was just no good at it because his time just wasn't right. But also we're going to look at the other thing that's very similar to serial killers in this respect, which is you remember how we talk about the reason why a lot of serial killers go active in their 30s? Mm. Because the idea is that at some point society looks at someone who's in their 30s and says, like, you should have a family, you should have a house, you should have some semblance of a career going together. And a lot of times serial killers have nothing. So it almost is like it becomes their new job. It becomes like a thing like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah. So a lot of these people really are like, for most of their lives, they're failures. They're not actually doing much. They're not doing what they feel like they should be doing. But Berg was actually about to catch his big break, but not before he had to live under his mother's shadow one last time.
God, you know how much he liked that, though.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So he just wished he was living under his mother's fucking panties.
So Virginia Berg was retired and living over in Huntington Beach in Southern California, right outside of Los Angeles. And Mama Berg couldn't help but notice all of the rudderless hippies wandering around with no particular place to be and nothing in particular to do.
Right.
So Virginia started handing out peanut butter sandwiches to the aimless youth of a hippie culture that was already dying. And once those hippies were in her buttery embrace, she told them about the word of Jesus.
I spent a week covered in peanut butter. It does not bring anyone closer to you.
Oh, definitely not. It would be fun, though.
Oh, it would be fun, yeah.
This is the main problem with being too open-minded. I'm down with being open-minded in general. As you can imagine, I'm fairly open-minded when it comes to things I believe in. But you just can't be turned on to Jesus Christ because somebody gave you a fucking peanut butter sandwich.
If you're tripping nuts, though, it sounds like this chick is Jesus. That's all. That's the only thing I want from my Lord and Savior is a peanut butter sandwich. I don't even need the jelly.
I tell you what. I fucking got a lot less for my fucking Catholic church than a peanut butter sandwich. I didn't even get molested.
That's sad.
David Berg rejoined his mother in Huntington Beach in 1968, changed the name of his kids' band from the Berg Family Singers to Teens for Christ, and set them to performing on the beaches of California. And when Mama Berg finally died, David was 50 years old, and he said that at that moment, his bitterness turned into a voice for revolution.
Now you're going to see. So literally, his best time, literally the best part of his life was after he was 50 years old.
Yeah.
You need to remember that, guys. As if you go out there and you're struggling in your 30s, sometimes it takes your 50 to figure out how to run your cult. He's kind of like a Bryan Cranston.
That's true.
It's kind of the Pentecostal days. That was like his Airwolf, you know, the Huntington Beach time. That was sort of his, you would say, his Malcolm in the Middle. And then eventually, the Children of God, that would be his Breaking Bad.
I like Malcolm in the Middle more than Breaking Bad. I'm going to say it. I like the kid in the wheelchair. Why are you so weird? He's great. And I think Malcolm, well, I mean, what a... And,
perfect. Are you saying a tour de force, huh?
Yeah, and I love the kid. And I love the little
youngest
kid. And
you know what's also one of my favorite parts about Malcolm in the Middle? None of the parents fuck the kids in it.
Not once! Not once!
See, David Berg's movement was just one of many that were taking advantage of the disillusionment of the hippies in the late 60s. A lot of these people had come out of the good times feeling empty, and a lot of them decided the only thing that could fill the hole left behind was Jesus. If you're asking yourself...
Jesus,
if
Jesus could fill that fucking 9-inch, fucking 3-inch around fucking hole inside of each one of us. Boom, boom, boom! Just fucking raggedly filling that hole. A jackhammer.
I mean, a lot of people wonder. In fact, I wondered this myself. Like, how is California so full of Christians? Why are there so many Christians in California? And this is one of the reasons why, is that a lot of these people, they were in the hippie movement. Mm-hmm. They found that it was all complete and total horseshit. So they moved on to Jesus to still get that little jolt that they needed that they used to get from promiscuous sex and a little bit of weed and acid.
Yeah, and let's be honest. The sun makes you dumb. And good weather makes you stupid. Everyone is beautiful, so you don't have to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
It is a perfect storm of failed actors, future waiters who found Jesus Christ. All they were looking, they're empty vessels looking to be filled with any kind of information and knowledge to give their life self-worth.
There's literally nothing more gullible or sellable than a failed actor.
Nothing.
See, you could take a failed actor and you could turn them into anything. You could break them down. This is who MK Ultra should have been using. Because those fucking actors would have jumped right into fake being child prostitutes in a fucking second.
Oh my God, the CIA is like, oh, we've got to give them drugs. You have to be a manager who gives them a motivational speech about how great it is to wait on the wealthy. And then boom, have you ever been in the service industry?
Yeah.
The pre-service speech is like, we're out there. It's like Patton telling the troops to go to war.
Yeah, I worked at Joe's Crab Shack. You should have heard the bullshit that guy told us before we went out to dance to the Austin Powers theme song. You need to put everything you have into the chicken dance. If you don't put everything you have, then you are doing a disservice to the Joe's Crab Shack name.
They say the next frontier is space, but many scientists say that the next frontier is the ocean. Now, also remember, conch fritters are 4 for $9 today.
Whoa! Did you just say 4 for $9 today?
See, as far as really sweeping in and taking advantage of all this, Berg is really not that different from Manson. And in fact, Charles Manson is the cult leader that I would compare Berg to the most. Berg, like Manson, came upon the 60s counterculture from a completely different world as an outsider and immediately saw an opportunity to manipulate and control these people.
And who else does it sound like? Outsider? Talking to from the coming in the opportunity to manipulate broken people.
Alex
Jesus
Jones.
Christ.
Are you talking about Alex Jones?
No, Alex Jones is now legit.
I know he's become a voice in America.
But now look at this time period. We had Manson, Jim Jones, L. Ron Hubbard. They were all in the same areas,
right?
Doing the same shit. They were all like, Scientology was another offshoot of weird Christianity mixed with like meditation practices. You got Jim Jones also doing fringe Christianity. Everybody is getting into it business.
Yeah, in California.
If I could go back in time, you're talking to a 1950s father yelling at his son for growing out his hair. Everything he told that son was true.
You're right.
All of a sudden, you're going to start having sex with everybody. You're going to take drugs. You're going to end up an evangelical crazy Christian or whatever it might be. It all became true. I almost think the 50s were a better generation than the 60s because the 60s caused the 70s.
See, the big difference between Berg and Manson was that Berg was about 20 years older than Manson because Manson was in his early 30s when he came across the hippie movement. And Berg also already had extensive training as a charismatic religious leader from years in the Pentecostal church. But most importantly, Berg wasn't a complete and total moron like Manson was.
Manson's just a fucking idiot. You just fucking slopped his way in there, and then you've got. But like Berg has training,
yes.
Which is really right. Dangerous for a group of impressionable people.
He had 15 years training in a missionary school.
I gotta give the guy a little bit of credit. He did his time.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't like he just jumped right to crazy preacher like Manson did. He worked really hard at the profession.
So the Children of God had its beginnings at the Light Club, a coffee house and youth ministry in Huntington Beach, started by Teen Challenge, which was a part of the Pentecostal denomination Assemblies of God.
Ugh.
And it was almost tailor-made to have Berg step in.
There's so many places like this in L.A. when you drive around that are just offshoots of Scientology. It's all the same shit. It's like one right. is like the House of Unified Philosophy, the House of like all of these like weird, like they have like esoteric 5 or 4 word long like club names. They're all offshoots of Scientology, all leads back to a cult mentality. And it's so L.A. has not changed a fucking bit.
No, absolutely not. See, Berg, he let his kids lay the groundwork. The band, the Teens for Christ. They would lure people off the boardwalk by covering pop songs. Then they give them free coffee and free peanut butter sandwiches.
Ugh. No!
Again with the peanut butter sandwich trap.
It's too dry. It's too dry.
But their mouths are so wet with just acid drip.
And once these people were comfortable, that's when the proselytizing would begin. And
you know what the Celebrity Center for Scientology uses? They play Major League on a screen outside of the Celebrity Center once a week.
Wait, Major League, the Charlie Sheen movie? The baseball movie?
Yes.
It is unbelievable.
Willie Mays Hayes?
You don't have to do any... Yeah, the balls. The guy walking around. It's so easy. You just give them a little bit. You just make them feel mildly comfortable.
Yeah, it's a very common tactic among cults. They lull in vulnerable people into a place of comfort and belonging, and once that person feels like they finally found a group that understands them, it's usually after like a couple of days. The Hare Krishnas were really good about this. They'd go up to people that looked lost, that looked a little bit sad, and they'd say like, "Hey, brother, what's going on?" They'd start having a conversation with them, and then they'd say, like, "Hey, listen, we're all going up to this retreat in the mountains for a couple of days. Do you want to come with us? You got anything going on?" And these people, they're very lonely, they're very sad, yeah. And they got nothing to do. And also, people were a lot more trusting back then, and they'd say, "Sure, let's go and check it out."
You know what that sound is?
What?
That's the sound of fish in the boat. Going to fish and reeling in the fish.
That's it.
Yeah, and then after they hung out for a couple of days and they had a really good time, they really like everybody, and more importantly, everybody likes them.
Right.
And that is when the sales pitch comes in.
Because think about this. Who is a more unspoken to and an unloved group of people than a group of people that would show up on a lawn in the middle of Franklin Avenue in order to watch Major League in public?
I agree. You know what, though? There has to be at least a few people who totally understood what the game was. Let's just say I'm walking down the street. Papa John's is in the house. Papa's in the house. Come on in. Free Papa. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be there. As soon as they start preaching, I'm out.
Yeah.
You're a sucker. I'm the winner. You're an asshole. I just got free Papa John's.
I signed up for 2 credit cards to get free sandwiches at Quiznos.
You beat Capital One.
See, what Berg would do is he lurked in the shadows and he watched his kids perform for all the unwashed hippies. He'd pay attention to what they responded to and what turned them off, and he finally came up with the perfect N, capital T, capital S, the system.
System, man.
Yeah, the system, dude. That's what's keeping us down, right. Bro.
God, it is so Trumpian. It's ridiculous.
It really is. And in 1968, he published his public declaration in a Huntington Beach newspaper called The War on the System, where he raged against the educational system, the church system, the government, and most importantly, the parental system. And
fuck yeah. This, fuck mom. Fuck dad. Yeah. They won't let you have sex with them. They don't understand you.
And then if that wasn't enough, here's a free peanut butter sandwich. Boom! I mean, now you know what? I'm hooked. Now I actually want to be one of the child of God.
See, this right here, this was a genius move on Berg's part. He painted the parents as the rebels rather than the kids being the rebels. See, the kids, they were looking to return to the old times and things were simple. You know, why you gotta wear a shirt, man? Why we gotta wear shoes? Why can't we just wear sandals, share everything? Why can't we just be a community? Why do we gotta get a job?
And yeah, I'm sitting here in my underwear in a dog bed.
You are the future, yeah. Henry.
And Berg told them that it was the parents who were actually rebelling against God, which it's pretty much, I'm not crazy, you're crazy. We're the normal ones.
What kind of God would be looking down on earth and be like, take it off. Take your clothes off, would you? I mean, they're like bizarre strip club owners or something.
But really, what they would do is they'd say like, man, Jesus was the biggest rebel of all.
Oh, I heard this so much growing up. I'm having so many flashbacks to Iwanas and
yeah,
all this stuff.
Absolutely, man. Like Berg, the people like him, they're the forerunners of all those Jesus is radical youth pastors that we all had to fucking deal with. Ugh. The cool preachers who every once in a while would say, damn.
Oh,
shit. And I don't give a damn what they think. Oh, my God. He must be amazing. We'd better trust everything he fucking says. And you know what? How many of those cool youth pastors? We all know a cool youth pastor who got busted for fucking one of the teenagers.
They always were fucking the teenagers.
That's the whole point.
They always were. Reverend Jim, what are you after? What are you after meetup today? He's like, hey, man. Just call me Jim. Yeah, all right. Yeah, no, cool. Yeah, I couldn't help but notice you were hanging out with Allison like a long time afterwards. I didn't know if you guys were having some kind of Bible study or like some kind of hangout, like some kind of cool. Because I'd love to come. I got all this popcorn. I'd love to make popcorn and maybe we could play the guitar or something. He's like, no, Paul. You're so fucking stupid. No, Paul. I just need you to just stick to Bible, stick to meetup. Okay? All right, because I'm going to be knuckles deep in Allison in about 2 hours.
Oh, it's right? Unreal.
Get it out of here. Get it out of here. All right? Love Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ loves you.
So accurate.
Yeah,
accurate.
The punk youth minister. All of these fucking. I mean, it is disgusting. Like, I want my men of God to be old and kind of crusty. Yes, yeah. They could be very friendly. They could be very much about love and peace. But don't try to fucking be cool.
I just want Mr. Rogers. By the way, Mr. Rogers, I read
about devout Christian. Great man.
Wonderful man. I read a little bit about Mr. Feely, the mailman.
Yeah.
He did regret that name.
He really did.
He did.
I bet he did.
He didn't understand how people would pervert it.
He didn't get it. I can't remember where Mr. McFeely came from. It was his mother's maiden name.
That's right.
Yeah, McFeely was his mother's maiden name. Oh. So he did it as a tribute to her and then just didn't think about it because he's such a kind soul.
Such a great guy.
They changed it from the first draft of the name, which was Mr. McFeel me.
That's why. That's why.
That's why.
That's why he hated it.
But they also flipped because the idea is that the way the hippies, so they talk about how like hippies never call themselves hippies. Right? They call themselves freaks.
Yeah.
That's kind of the idea is that they adopted the name freaks. And so in this world, they like the term Jesus freak.
Right.
They would talk about the term Jesus freak to the point where Billy Graham said, I love the Jesus freaks.
Right.
Who cares if they've got long hair because they preaching Jesus Christ? And then when it comes down to it, what's lamer than Billy Graham saying he likes you?
Oh, these jerk-offs. These are the ones who put Carter in the White House. But we're not even going to get into that. It is interesting, though. So he did not want to be the God. He did allow Jesus to be the main figure of his cult.
He wanted to be Moses.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that is a little bit different than someone like a David Koresh or Charles Manson.
Yeah, he was not the savior. He was merely the person. He was the prophet. That's what he wanted to be. All he wanted to be was the prophet. He wasn't claiming, because that was able to get even more people in, because if you've got like a cult leader that is claiming, I am God, then you're going to have a hell of a lot less people saying, yeah, sign me up. But if you have someone saying like, I'm not God, we love God, but I have all of the answers that God is giving me, then that is at least a tiny bit more reasonable. You know, like, I mean, you look at people like Joel Osteen.
Of course, attach yourself to a bigger brand.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Exactly.
Well, again, it's also about, it's feeding them
and letting it grow. Because you can see, it's like, so what we're saying right here, right? He started growing out his hair and his beard, giving sermons dressed in a Japanese kimono, which is questionable. But then he's mixing around the names because it's really about coming up with a good name. Right? Because the cult needs a good, like, Om Shinrikyo.
Whoa, that is a good name.
That's a good cult name.
Yeah, it's wonderful. He went from Teens for Christ to the Jesus Children to the Jesus Movement.
Getting there.
To Revolutionaries for Christ.
Kind of fun.
Which is kind of fun. It's getting there.
It's a little Civil War reenactment-y.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little stinky.
Finally, they were actually given their name through a newspaper article that was written about them when they started getting a little bigger. A newspaper journalist called them the Children of God.
Ding, 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 ding.
Which is also how Spider-Man got his name.
Isn't that nice? And didn't Richard Ramirez also get his name from the newspapers?
The Night Stalker. Yeah.
Because he wanted to be something else, right?
He wanted, they originally called him, the Screen Door Intruder.
Screen Door Intruder, yes.
So what they did is they co-opted 60s counterculture even further by encouraging sit-ins, marches, and protests against established churches and what they deemed to be unfair arrests at Huntington Beach College when a few of their members were charged with trespassing when they refused to stop handing out religious pamphlets on campus. These guys really pushed to make themselves an enemy.
And this is why I do sympathize with people in political power, because everyone looks at protesters like, oh, they must be protesting for my cause. But then you actually go and talk to them and you're like, no, I am protesting less gaping in porn. Or like whatever, protest these random, you know, people aren't racist enough. And I'm here to tell the American people to get more racist.
It's like, you guys are getting creative. What is, but also remember at this point, the Children of God was an almost asexual church, right? It's like he was doing, there was no sex. There was no
asexual church.
Yes, it was like becoming it was about purity. It was about, they were preaching God and they were driving around on buses. And the idea was that sex was only allowed between a married man and woman. And it was about purely living in your faith, and which is what really got people involved in it, actually, because there was so much hedonism in the hippie movement that everyone was used to drugs and sex. They wanted a break from it. So that's a part of how he sort of keyed them in. Like, now he's doing that. Not only he has the look of a hippie, and like they all do, they all look like hippies, but now he's saying it's actually cool to be pure.
Yeah.
And so that's it's building a little world where everybody feels comfortable. Yeah. And then slowly but surely, you start fucking with it see what you can get away with.
Yeah, a lot of these people, like all the free love and drugs, it hurt a lot of people. It hurt a lot of people in a lot of different ways. I mean, it really scarred the soul. You know, a lot of these people in Haight-Ashbury, like, for example, like, I mean, that turned into a heroin den. I mean, a lot of these kids came out. They came out and they were homeless. A lot of them ended up in prostitution. And not only that, but, you know, if you're fucking somebody and you really dig them and all of a sudden they start fucking somebody else saying that it's free love, that sucks.
Right.
It really does suck. I mean, these people, like the hippie movement was just a whole field of heartbreak.
Yeah.
And people like David Berg came in and told him, like, hey, listen, we're going to get away from all that. We're still going to do the spiritual stuff. We're still going to do the stuff that you can feel good about. We're only going to take the stuff that you can feel good about. And that's all we're going to do until, of course, he decides to do a little bit more. So by 1969, it was time for Berg to start making prophecies like all good cult leaders are prone to do. He predicted that a great earthquake was going to swallow up California. So they had to get the hell out of there, a lot like Manson once again.
And Om Shinrikyo, everybody. Cults have to have a narrative.
Yeah.
A cult leader has to start building a narrative to keep people in line. And you have to develop a sort of loose time limit because you're creating the tension.
Urgency.
You're creating, you're stuck in this, and we're going to do, and now, because what you can do is be like, it's only a year, it's only 2 years. People are signing on for little chunks of time until all of a sudden it's been 15, 20 years, because that's the idea, is you keep stringing it and moving the timeline.
You sound like every divorcee, everyone who's ever been in a marriage. And it's also, these prophecies tend to lead to more isolation, right?
Yeah.
They tend to, like, separate themselves from society further and further and further.
Yeah, I mean, he had to get these people on the move because they're just hanging out. And if people are just hanging out, then eventually people get bored. That's just human nature. People just get bored. So you have to keep them moving. You have to give them something to look forward to, even if it is the end of the world.
They get bored, and also they are connected to society still. So there's still judgment. They're receiving judgment probably from friends and family, from places where they go to. They're like, they are now being known as cult members. They're being talked about behind their back. And he's also seeing like the TV. Everyone's watching TV. They're starting to maybe think, well, maybe this is not normal. Maybe this is not, maybe groupthink, which is always bad, is bad. You know what I mean? It's just like they're starting to think. And then so he needs to like, no. I need to bring them just into my hands.
Yeah. And not only that, but parents are starting to notice as well. Parents are starting to get real worried about all of these cults, extremely worried. So in 1969, Berg left a small congregation behind in Huntington Beach just in case the earthquake did not swallow up California, and that was the beginning of his many colonies that would, over the next couple of decades, dot the entire planet. You guys don't even know just yet the huge, gigantic scope of this cult. So Berg fled to Arizona with about 50 followers, comparing his trek to the Israelites' wanderings in the wilderness, and here they formed into 12 groups modeled after the 12 tribes of Israel, and the Children of God began their organization in earnest.
These guys must have been so fucking annoying. Apparently, they would pull in two or three school buses deep. And the idea is that, number one, they did not pay for anything. Yeah. So everything had to be donated. They didn't have any cash, or they would take one credit card from one family member's like cousin or uncle or father, and they would pay for a bunch of shit. They would roll in, and then their big thing was proselytizing. They would come in and immediately evangelize everybody around them. It must have been so, like, you see, because they're also pretty attractive. Young, like hippie people playing guitar and all this shit. It's like, man, that would have must have been so lame when they showed up.
I mean,
and
most cults are attractive. That's the amazing thing is that these people, what they do is they bring in the attractive people. They really, like the Manson family, his whole thing was getting cute girls and getting people to bring them. He used to get cute girls and then have those cute girls bring more people into the fold. The Buddhafield cult, their whole thing was beautiful people. That was the hottest goddamn cult I've ever seen in my life.
The hottest one?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Even hotter than the Hawaiian Tropic cult?
That and the Source family. The Source family and Buddhafield. Mwah. Yeah. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Super nice.
These cults, I just want to say, these cults are so, there were so many of them. I was just watching a documentary on Netflix about this guy who, I think he called himself a circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. There was just like PIs that would be hired by families of, you know, members of their family would go and join cults, and they would just kidnap them off the streets and then bring them into these institutions and break their minds again.
Deprogram. Yeah, we're actually going to get into guy on the next episode.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's a great documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. He went hard against the Children of God.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he really did. So when they were in Arizona, that's when Karen Zerbe, a.k.a. Mama Maria, entered the picture. Zerbe was another child of a preacher, just like Berg, and had been raised extremely conservative. She was described as, quote, skinny, buck-toothed, and extraordinarily plain.
She was a very plain-looking woman, but you can see how this charismatic man, older, in a kimono, surrounded by people who worship him, can pull someone like this deep into his web.
Yeah, he was 28 years older than her.
Well, if you're extraordinarily plain, I think that you're no longer plain. You're like Shelley Duvall, who, by the way, does not
Shelley
look
Duvall
good.
Shelley Duvall is very sick.
Yeah,
she is very mentally ill. Yeah. Yes. She believes that Robin Williams is not dead. She believes that he is shape-shifting.
I think she also believes Robin Williams is a real grandmother, and he wants to take care of the kids. Yeah. That's all he wants to do.
I just can't believe that old woman set her own breasts on fire.
I can't. That's...
So, despite being extraordinarily plain, Karen Zerbe was destined to become Queen Maria, David Berg's second wife. Now, ironically, Karen was whisked away from her home by Jane Berg, David's first wife. After Karen had decided to join the children, Jane showed up at her house and distracted Karen's parents while Karen packed up her things. They then fled and jumped in a van and met the rest of the congregation over at the Sears parking lot where they liked to hang out on weekends because nobody would really bother them there.
Oh, God, they're like waiting for Doc to show up in a DeLorean. I mean, what, they just hang out in a, before,
they
this
hang
is what
out
people
in
used
Sears
to do.
Parking lot all weekend,
In the night, for those that don't know, for the younger generation, 1990s, a lot of time in the Target parking lot.
So much time in parking lots.
So much parking lot.
All we used to do was smoke weed in the car behind the Walmart.
That's all you did.
Dumpster.
And then you would just go home.
Yeah, and then you'd dig through the dumpster and see what you could find.
Well, no, Marcus,
that's what you did because you lived like a raccoon.
Yes.
But this is very interesting. So then you're going to see how little allowances build to the entire cult. David Berg talked to Jane Berg, right? And he slowly said, I think that Karen is special. Right. And so he's like, OK, so they went all they did the full package to get her out of there. Well, now Berg starts working on Zerby, telling her super, super special, super special. While they're sitting in a sweet 26 foot long 1963 Ooh. Dodge camper Ooh. That many of the members also shared. And he called it the Ark.
Yeah,
he knows it doesn't float. Right.
This is what Berg said about the courtship between him and Karen later in a letter that went out to thousands of his followers.
Mostly we were just doing what we used to call necking. Just kissing, cuddling, fondling, and petting. She was a virgin, so it took me a little while to get her opened up.
Ugh.
But finally, one night, we got it together. And I mean sex.
Good Lord.
Now, the reason why we have so many, we're going to talk about this. The reason why we have so many quotes from David Berg is that because eventually he would go into isolation and the only way he would speak to his entire cult was with these letters called the Mo letters, which we'll get into.
So eventually Berg convinced both his wife and Zerby that polygamy was the only way to go from then on. And in a
how
meeting.
How do you convince these people?
I mean,
how do you swing this?
Because
shit?
He used his status as the end time prophet. He said, listen, I'm the end time prophet. He found biblical justification for fucking Zerby on the reg, and he rechristened her Maria, oh so close to Mary, because his wife, his first wife, was already all in. Like, she'd been with him for years, she had stood by him for years, and she bought all into this too.
And let's not pretend that these women aren't thrilled to have a night off from getting humped by this disgusting maniac who thinks he's the second coming. I mean, I would be more than happy to get another gal in there that has to pet this hog.
So later that year, Berg gathered his movement, which had grown to about 100 by this time, to the Laurentian Mountains of Quebec, a gathering that would be seen as the founding convention of the Children of God. David declared himself the new Moses, christening himself Moses David, which would later be shortened to just Mo. Ooh. David said that the end times were here, and he was the only one who could lead his people away from the established churches and the uncaring world of man, and so it was time for Armageddon to begin once again. And as we learned with Om Shinrikyo and the Manson cult, the best way to get people to do your bidding is to convince them that not only is the world ending, but the only way they can be saved is if they follow you and nobody else.
It's a good formula.
It's a great formula. Berg, he went straight fundamentalist in his escape plan, saying that his followers were to be the 144,000 allowed into heaven after the end times came. And
which is what he also took that from the Mormon shit. That's literally what he did. He took that little tool from the Mormons.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just not the Mormons. I mean, that's been used by fundamentalist Christians for decades before Berg came along. And he even sweetened the pot by saying that his followers would be able to pray people out of heaven to fill in their heavenly numbers should they not get to the 144,000 before the end times came.
Mr. Berg, that's really great, but do we have any more peanut butter sandwiches? I'm just here for the peanut butter sandwiches.
Unfortunately, we ran out of peanut butter sandwiches on Tuesday, but I tell you what, we've got piles and piles of cunnilingus.
Now, Berg said that Satan came in the form of protesters, teachers, government officials, and pastors. No authority figure could be trusted except Berg himself.
And
of course, and keeping true to the cult mentality, all new members were required to sign what they called revolutionary contracts, which forfeited all assets and properties to the cult. And the Children of God soon settled at the Texas Soul Clinic outside of the ghost town of Thurber, Texas, which is where we'll pick back up next week.
I'm just going to say, you know what? You don't have to settle outside of Thurber, Texas. Go inside.
Thurber's a ghost town. Yeah,
one's there. It's right settle right into.
Well, there's a bit of a tourist thing. It's an old mining town. It's right off of I-20. It's right near Groom and Desdemona.
I heard if you're real lucky, you could stub your foot on a piece of coal.
That is exciting.
Yes, Henry, if you are really lucky, you can. Thurber's a wonderful place in Texas mythology.
It doesn't sound very
Thurber's fun. Great.
You said it was a ghost town.
Terrible. Yeah, I know. It's super cool. Do you guys not want to go to a ghost town?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as like a great bastion of fun.
Yeah, I want to go to a place that has like a bar and a movie theater and like a dance hall.
The bar, you can go to the bar in Clarendon.
But there isn't one in Thurber. So I would like to go to the bar in Thurber, but then there isn't one.
Thurber.
Thurber. No. Oh, I see. Thurber. I'm sorry.
Just remember, the whole thing about these episodes, which I like, is to remember that groupthink is always bad.
Always bad.
Well, unless you have, if you're a construction team building a highway, it's very good.
That's otherwise, working together. That's not groupthink.
Well, you have to think with one mind.
Well,
no, you don't.
No.
No, the jackhammers need to think like jackhammers. And the hammer guys, the irregular hammers, need to think like hammers.
The hammer guys? The hammer guys.
I don't think, I don't even know if you use a hammer to build a highway, but anyway. All right, so the Armageddon is upon us.
Yeah, the Armageddon is upon us. They have set up their first official settlement, and next week is when we're really going to get into the absolutely disgusting stuff like flirty fishing, and then the week after that is when we're going to see murder.
So this is the most innocent of the three parts.
Easily the
doubt,
most innocent.
Right?
This is just This is just telling you who these people are, how they operate, and what they do. And this is. And we've never really covered a full-on Christian cult before. I mean, all the rest of the guys we've covered. I mean, Waco. That was more about, you know, the government's response to it. Om Shinrikyo. Right. They were more, you know, like they were a sci-fi cult. The Manson family. They were a Manson cult. But I think it is important for us to really go through these Christian cults, and especially now, cult mentality, because cult mentality is big now on every side.
Literally, it's just like lynch mobs are everywhere on every part of our landscape in America right now. And at this, it's bad. It is always bad.
Yeah.
Stay individual.
Stay an individual. Everybody, like, be an individual.
Well, I mean, you know,
think for yourself.
If someone offers you a peanut butter sandwich, you know, hear what they have to say.
No!
Just hear what they have to say. That's all
never
I'm saying.
Do it. Don't even listen. Don't listen because, ooh, the sweet temptation of a peanut butter sandwich.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this recent episode of Last Podcast on the Left. Thanks for supporting all the shows here on Cave Comedy Radio. Let's see, we got Roundtable of Gentlemen. That's a very fun show if you want to get, you know, just hang out with us. Poop Gate's back in the news, apparently, and Mattress Gate is currently,
Mattress Gate's big right now.
Mattress Gate is big, and I was the one who technically provided the evidence that started the whole Mattress Gate thing again, and I gotta say, I'll give you $200 to give the mattress if we could mail it to Donald Trump.
I think that would be a campaign contribution that might be, well, maybe now legal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of Donald Trump, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, we were just on the news and new and noteworthy part of iTunes. So that was so nice. We're on the front page of iTunes. Thank you guys so much. We beat Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Speaking of cult leaders, who now wants to sort of backtrack on the cult that he started.
Oh, did you see that picture of him with the little trilby hat and the scarf and the glasses?
God, it's special.
He's really having a good time.
He is. So thank you so much for supporting the shows. Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities, The Lucky Bone Show, and listen to Wizard and the Bruiser as well. Holden McNeely and Jake Young do a great video game show.
Absolutely. And December 17th in Portland, we still have some tickets for our early show that's definitely going to sell out, so get your tickets now. January 7th in Boston, we still got some tickets for the early show there as well. These shows are without a doubt going to sell out, so don't sit on your hands. Get those tickets now, and we're going to be releasing tickets in December for Chicago and San Francisco. We can officially say those are coming. So if you want first crack at those tickets, go and follow us at LP on the Left. Go join the Facebook group. Tickets are always announced on those pages before we announce it on the show. So if you want to make sure to get your tickets to these shows, go and follow us, and you'll be sure to get first crack at these things.
That's right. And you know what? You are allowed to sit on your hands if you can type with your nose. That's kind of fun.
And if you really want to get first crack at these tickets, join our Patreon. Thank you so much to everybody who has joined our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft if you want to give. Even a dollar helps. Every tiny little bit helps, and it really is a big lifesaver here. In fact, it allowed Ben to do something pretty exciting lately.
That's right. I have big news. I will still be appearing on Fox News, but I will no longer be producing on Fox News because I don't have to do that anymore. Longer. So thank you guys so much from the bottom of my heart. I'm making money solely through the art and solely through these wonderful podcasts and live performances, and it really does mean a lot to me. It's been a long, unbelievable journey, but 20 years in the making.
Yeah.
So
nice,
thank you guys so much.
It's nice to see that you have tentative morals, but they were literally, they were challenged.
They were challenged.
And you stepped back and you did it. You saw the devil, and then you came right back. The bad devil, not the good devil.
Yes.
Because also Speak of the good devil, please watch Your Pretty Faces Going to Hell on Adult Swim, Sundays, 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. We're really doing well in the ratings, and we really need to keep it that way. I work so hard on the show. We all work so hard on the show. It's like, please watch if you can. Like, it's these next couple episodes are going to be really funny, too.
Yeah, awesome. And, of course, don't forget, speaking of Adult Swim, don't forget to watch the last stream on the left. That's at AdultSwim.com every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be taking next week off. We're not going to have an episode or a new stream next week. We're all going to take a little bit of time off, let our brains spool back up again. But we will be back in 2 weeks with Children of God Part 2.
That's right. We will be doing a top hat, though, and we will give you information to win the Thanksgiving dinner table.
Oh, you're going to win it so hard. I came up with a good... I actually came up with a pretty good metaphor to help explain it to the farmers, but we'll talk about that. How to...
Tell about your little politics in the next show. I cannot handle it here. This is a safe space.
This is a safe space. Surprisingly safe, considering... Yeah.
And make sure you plug us, follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, Instagram at Dr. Fantasty,
I'm at Ben Kissel, Ben Kissel 1 on Instagram, still don't know how to use it, but please follow me on Twitter. I really do love interacting, and Marcus Parks is Marcus Parks for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And for Last Spot Against the Left, follow us at LP on the Left on everything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah, hail yourselves.
Yeah, hail game.
Hail Satan, hail sweet, sweet Satan. These times, these hard, hard times, it's good to rely on the only person that is remotely reliable, Satan himself.
And which is yourself. So nice.
And guys, don't have sex with your child this week.
Good God. I don't think we have to constantly say that.
I think we do. Unfortunately, I think we do. Donald Trump called...
Hail yourself. All right, hail yourself. Everyone. You said no politics.
May goostalations.
Our president.
May goostalations. I said my goostalations.
That's the end of it.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.